welcome to the Denfos Way podcast. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy journalist and a current training instructor here at Denfos. Joining me today are three Adobe Public Sector Digital Media Solutions consultants. I have Stephen Lewis, Paul Kress, and Jeffrey Young, and they're here today to talk about generative AI and the creative tools they've developed for its use in their products. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. So we just had a wonderful workshop that you guys did for us here that was talking all about generative AI, its use in your products, sort of the future of AI, where we are and where we're going. And really, that's what we're here to talk about. The workshop itself was fascinating. The examples that you showed us of its use in Photoshop and other Adobe products is sort of mind-bending that technology has come that far. So that's what we're here to discuss today. And the first question that I would ask you is, what does Adobe want people to think about when they think about AI? What should be in the forefront of people's minds?
So I would say at the forefront, they want AI to be a tool, kind of alongside, like a co-pilot for yourself to help you produce what you need to do at speed, taking away some of the mundane tasks of the content creation for you, as well as also generate ideas from the start. And then we also want to, in a way, democratize the ability to create content of some of the things of the knowledge workers and business users to be able to submit a prompt in there. We're kind of at that stage where you saw like on the sitcoms in the 90s where it said, hey, just Photoshop it. And people forgot that graphic designers took about, you know, days in order to do some of those things. And now you see that it takes really just clicking and typing text that anybody can do in order to do some of those quick fixes or quick content creation for that. So we want them to think about it in terms of speed, scale. And then also, we know that there's risks and challenges and questions along the way. And so we want to bring both confidence and trust and, you know, stay on brand and style, leveraging the tools and leveraging the content's already been created with you all.
Gotcha. And then, Steve, you came to us today as sort of the DoD representative working with Adobe. And I was hoping you could tell me just a little bit about sort of your position and kind of what you do every day working so closely hand in hand with Adobe and the Department of Defense.
Thank you. One of the reasons why I wanted to help support the Department of Defense is because of my background with DoD. I'm an Air Force reservist. I've been in the Air Force now for 21 years, both prior and enlisted. So I'm a Denfos trained killer. I've been through the school twice. So initially was going through the BPASS J, the journalism class, and when I was enlisted in as an officer, coming in through PAQC. So that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to stay within DoD is to help continue to support all the services, especially since I have access to a lot of what Adobe's putting out from a Creative Cloud perspective. So I wanted to make sure all of those great tools got in the hands of my fellow content creators, photojournalists, video broadcasters, you name it. So I wanted to leverage that access to empower everyone that's serving with me when I'm in uniform with the same tools I get to use day in, day out at Adobe. So that's my job in a nutshell. In Adobe, I just help by coming to talk to the different services, a lot of public affairs folks, communicators and such, and listen to the challenges that they have with everyday content creation. So the fact that there's not a lot of resources on their team to handle more intricate functions, this trying to get things done more quickly with transcribing long videos and putting things out in social media. So I get to hear a lot of those challenges, and luckily I'm able to then turn around and provide solutions to those challenges. So, you know, leveraging AI and Firefly to really streamline some of those basic day-to-day workflows that take a lot of time, or leveraging machine learning to help auto-transcribe long videos so you can get transcription on the fly. So I get excited every day that I know that I'm going to make a difference to and impact a lot of the folks that I serve right alongside, and know that we're all doing good things because of it.
Absolutely. That's awesome. You mentioned a couple of things in the answer to your question, but I was hoping you guys could touch on just kind of an overview on how AI can help us kind of in our daily use of content creation in our career field.
Yeah, I don't want to soak up too much of the conversation here. I got these gentlemen with me that are just as well-versed, if not better. I look at sort of – I'll give you a perfect example of a scenario. When I was on reserve duty – a while back. I worked alongside an airman who essentially was trying to basically edit a photo, and the edits were going to be really heavy and really time consuming, and we had to get things out very quickly. So, you know, at the time, I thought in my head, I'm like, you know, if we had some sort of capability that could speed up that process, and really what it came down to was just eliminating some of the content in this photo so it could be more well-versed for public consumption and more received by the public, doing something that takes a lot of time with clone stamping and things. So having the ability then to provide some sort of AI-based solution would really save time so that way we can get that out the door quickly and then move on to the next thing. So when I think about sort of the day-to-day use cases and solutions, I think about all of the random things that we have to do each day that take a lot of time. So basic edits to photos that could take a lot of time, or creating, Jeffrey mentioned sort of making sure that we're getting the ability for people to create to the average person, right? So right now, a lot of like the graphic design tasks that are done in the field or at a wing have to be done by someone who's a little bit more well-versed in graphic design. But if you have a social media manager who's a public affairs officer that has to get a graphic out to go along with the press release or a major sort of speaking engagement, we want to give them the ability to be able to do that themselves. Oh, by the way, high quality, branded, and in a template format they can do over and over again. Those are some of the functions that I think AI could help support and assist those day-to-day things. And our job, myself, Jeffrey, and Paul, are to help bring more awareness to that by coming to workshops like this, coming on site like this, so we can tell people, look, AI is available now. We're aware of the things that you do on a daily basis, and we really want to help you get it done quicker so you can move on to the more fun stuff that would take more time that actually would be great for you.
So one of the things that I saw already is that in your presentation, you guys have worked generative into AI into a lot of the Adobe programs already. What programs currently benefit from generative AI, and which ones are you looking to benefit from in the future?
Currently, Firefly is inside of Express. That's the web-based application you saw. It's also inside of Photoshop, like Steve demonstrated. And then we have it in beta right now in Illustrator, so you can generate vectors, text to vector. And they're working on Premiere. That's something. And then, actually, we have Acrobat coming here pretty soon, too, probably in a month or so, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Basically, awesome. So virtually everything
at
some point.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. I think that is really the goal. You know, it is kind of a novelty to generate text to image. It's fun and everything, but we really want it to be something that our professionals and creatives that are spending all the money to do all these jobs to do it better.
And what we're seeing kind of in that surge of Gen AI is that it used to be a whole separate system in a separate box and a lot of times like a DOS-like prompt, and then you get something back and then you don't know how to bring it into the next stage or you're interacting with things. And we want to put it right there within the tools that you're using on a day-to-day. So it fits right into your process and your workflows, and it's right there at arm's reach within the applications that you're currently using, as well as leveraging all the tools of validating and collaborating with some of your other peers on the engagements.
And on the Air Force side, we always used to use the expression left seat, right seat. And of course, that's pilot navigator, right? So to me, our Firefly functionality that's built into Photoshop, and we showed demonstrations of what that could be, you could use it for day-to-day things on the military side, it's a perfect co-pilot to your day-to-day functions, just a wing woman or wingman. Right, you have it assisting you with day-to-day functions. It's there for you to give you a helping hand when you need it, and that's how I see it as that left seat, right seat co-pilot sort of aspect in those applications like that.
Could you guys? A lot of people may not be familiar with the programs, but you just kind of showed us Adobe Firefly and Adobe Express. Can you talk to me about what those programs are and how they're going to work for the public?
Yeah, sure. Adobe Express is intended to be the quick content creation tool. It's got a lot of template-based designs in there that are already professionally designed. So you can look them up and you remix it, right? That way you don't have to be a designer to know how to use it. You can generate like a flyer or a social media graphic or something like that, and they're already done in there. And it does have a lot of design elements and animations and things that you can add to it. So you can start from scratch. You can enhance any of the pre-designed things on your own. But Firefly is also built into it. So if something is not available in there. Maybe one of the templates doesn't meet your needs, or you're not finding an image that suits your background or something. You can generate something right there on the fly as well. And it really is intended to kind of be that tool for everybody that is not not going to have the background with Photoshop or Premiere or some of these applications that are pretty intense, and they might take a long time to learn. They're easier. It's approachable to use Express.
And Firefly, just to explain that a little bit, is our Gen AI imagery tool. So whether it's raster or vector, it's taking spoken words, language, and then creating amazing graphics. And there's a great now science around how to generate really good prompts, what type of descriptions, how you describe the styles, and taking advantage of what content has been learned on to generate something that no one else has ever seen before, just by typing in verbs, adjectives, and a few nouns.
Yeah,
it's amazing. When the technology first became available, it was mind-blowing, and I still find it mind-blowing today. And to watch it seamlessly integrate with what you guys were doing on the screen was pretty fascinating. You know, it just shows how far that we've come. One of the things that comes immediately to my mind as a layman when we talk about AI and we talk about images and we talk about content creation is obviously the ethics and the morals and questions that come along with that. So can you guys talk a little bit about Adobe's ethical standards and how that pertains to AI?
Yeah, Steve talked about the joy that he has and the jobs that we have to work with federal agencies and showcasing the tools. And I think the biggest part that we love now evangelizing is the Adobe ethical framework and how we are hopefully bringing ease and appeasing some of the challenges and concerns as it comes to Gen AI for our tools specifically. And so it probably dates back that we've been doing Gen AI for decades. We've been part of AI in many capacities. But they established early on that we need an ethical framework before we continue any further. And so they established this kind of like a constitution and it said that this is how we have a framework. This is anything that's inside this box, we can do. Anything that's outside, we have to have that conversation to do an amending. We created a review board to review some of these tougher questions that we have to. And the makeup of this grouping is not just engineers or data scientists. It transcends from legal to finance, just everyone being a part of this conversation to say this is how we are going to move going forward. This in turn has given our applications and engineering team such freedom to work within those guidelines. And so that way they're not bogged down by some of these questions of do we use the corpus of the internet to train our model? The question's already been answered. No, we need to take care of the copyrights and those folks. So we're going to be using only what's part of Adobe stock. And then that in turn now gives to provide the commercially safe to use images down to the end users that are generating it. So the ethical framework is very big. It's a major topic of conversations, both on the Hill, in the executive branch, but all the way to the users and citizens. And so we are combating, I recognize that you guys had recent conversations on mis and disinformation. This is a key part to Gen AI, and that's probably a concern. So what we are doing to help provide accountability, transparency, and responsibility as part of our pillars of the framework. And we can certainly get into a lot more on the content authenticity side to help combat disinformation.
Which is incredibly important, as I'm sure that you know, with the world that we live in today. And it's good to see Adobe trying to be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. And I think a big part of that is something that you just mentioned there, which is only using Adobe stock for your AI as opposed to setting it free on the internet. Can you talk a little bit about that decision, sort of why that's beneficial?
Yes. So as you can imagine, our heritage in Adobe is for the digital creators and honoring those content creators and the copyrights they have. We are very passionate about that. And so the only way to really take care of that is that when things are being fed into a model, these are images that have been captured with photography. These are images that have been designed and created. We only wanted to use stuff that was part of the Adobe corpus that we owned and had rights to be able to use, as well as public domain images to help train. Models will be great the more images you pump at it, but we also wanted to, and the great thing about this, we've already curated this content. We've already had great tags and things that were being leveraged and what people were searching for, so there's the data around it. And this helps honor the content creators who have uploaded their content for Adobe stock. So you get that democratization of the images, but we also are able to take care of those copyrights because we know what model, what images were used as part of that model. And so there's mechanisms in place to make sure that the copyright owners of that, when they uploaded it, get credit alongside with that. But we now, because of that decision early on that said we're going to use only Adobe stock, we now provide commercially safe to use indemnification down to the end users to create it. So they don't have to worry about the legality of things as they are helping to use this, whether for publish or even for ideation.
And that segues perfectly into my next question, which was going to be, are your products safe for government use and for commercial use with when you're using AI like that? And it sounds like they are.
Yeah.
And that's really important, especially when it comes to government use and the rules that we teach here at DINFOS. You know, our students, when they go out into the career field, certainly don't want to break any of those rules. So knowing that they can use your products and use that AI safely is fantastic. That's a really, really, really beneficial to them, especially.
Yes.
You guys talked about your content authenticity initiative, which I thought was really interesting because it doesn't just happen with Adobe. It happens with a lot of other corporations and companies worldwide. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll start on that one. So it's been an interesting, certainly last decade of, as you talk about misinformation, disinformation that's out there. And we recognize our tools are part of that. As you said, there's being part of the solution, as well as we recognize Photoshop is used to exploit and do many modifications to imagery. And so what we wanted to do is our technology is going to continue to get better and to be able to, and as well as many other technologies. So trying to figure out, if something is fake is really chasing the wind. It's just going to keep going further and further. So now let's prove that this is true. And we actually have been doing that, especially in government publishing offices and DOD. They've been certifying their PDFs with digital signatures. And then when you open it up in Adobe Reader or Acrobat, you get that nice little blue seal and say, this was published at this point in time. Any changes or manipulations, or it also does protection if necessary. You're able to see the full provenance for that has taken place for that, as well as you get that nice certification and assurance that is in there and it was signed. That's similar to what we're doing now with imagery, and this capability is now available for audio and visuals or video, is that we are putting content credentials, which is a signed image in this case, and we're able to validate at what point it was signed and what point things that have either transpired since then. If you've opted in to show what provenance has taken place, whether you've done a neural filter on there or done some cropping, it will also be able to track that if you've opted into that, but you also know what it was like at the time of creation. And part of our guidance, as well as what Adobe has as our framework, is anything created with our Gen AI is going to have content credentials on there. And this content authenticity, you can go to contentauthenticity.org and contentcredentials.org to look at this a little bit further. There's over 2,000 companies and agencies that are saying, we are on board with this, and they're all starting to begin implementation of how they want to visualize this in the web and the web content management systems, but also how to capture it, say, like camera manufacturers at the point of its origination. This will hopefully be a part of combating content forgery that is taking place.
And I wanted to add to that, too. When it comes to, like, the DINFOS and the instruction here, obviously for students that come through that are going to be taking photos, they're issued a camera system. So Nikon or Canon, I believe it's Nikon still, that's being issued. With content credentialing and with this technology being updated with some of the companies that Jeffrey was talking about, we're going to see things like Nikon, where in some of their later models, they're going to update the menu system to be able to flip a switch for content credentialing at the point, like Jeffrey mentioned, at the camera. So from a DINFOS perspective, I can see it where a student would go out and take photos for an assignment, make sure that the switch is turned on and content credentialing in the menu screen, and then they come back and do the edits in Photoshop and continue to do things like brightness controls, exposure, maybe generative AI and Firefly down the road. And that sort of journey, that breadcrumb that started at the camera, will then be captured on the photo itself and in Photoshop. So when that photo gets exported, you'll be able to then see from the start, photo taken on December 12th, 2023, a Nikon XYZ D camera. now onto Photoshop where Firefly was applied and exposure settings were applied, things like that. That's where I think it really kind of plays nicely on the Dimpo side because that can be part of that process, even from going outside the schoolhouse here to take that photograph and then edit it further.
Absolutely, and you what you've created is sort of a gold seal, right? What you proof of concept or a proof of controlled product, right? Anything that has that those content credentials, it essentially says, look, this was not we're not trying to hide anything, right? This wasn't an AI generated image, or if it was, we're telling you that from step one, and here's all the steps of things that had happened to that image down 30 steps down the line, right? And any image that doesn't have those content credentials, there's no way to prove essentially where it came from. So having those content credentials gives you that gold seal on that image. And that's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, that is a great idea because in this world of misinformation and disinformation, we need some kind of proof that what we're looking at is real. And it seems like this is a great way to combat that.
Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of partnerships involved in that, not only from an education and a policy and really the expectation for everyone in the public to start to look for this as a way of validating how this would be, but also partners along the way. Like we said, there's 2,000 partners in this C2PA content authenticity initiative continuing to grow, and I think that everyone sees both the need and a great way to do this using open source technology.
And in case the audience didn't get that, it's important to note that this isn't just an Adobe thing. There's 2,000 plus other corporations and companies that are going to be using this kind of watermark, these content credentials to verify their images. And that means it's going to spread so far beyond you. It should hopefully become ubiquitous.
Yes.
And that's what we're looking for.
Leica is already using it now. They just announced with one of their camera systems that is available now in one of their in a Leica camera. Sony is going to be updating some of their camera systems with this ability too. So absolutely, it's not just us. It takes a whole a whole group of people, a whole community of people to make this happen, right?
Giddy up.
Are there other ways, sort of, that you guys can detect digital forgery or images that were created through the use of AI as opposed to just those content credentials?
So if it's using Adobe AI, then yes, it's automatic. Anytime you download or create something out of our AI tool, it's got that credentials on there. So one, that's the start of it. In terms of sort of that backwards image search, which is certainly been asked many times, that that's actually probably part of our both privacy and our guidelines, is that right now you're submitting a prompt in there, you get your returns. That's really just a communication between you and that server at that point in time. We're not capturing your prompt. We're not capturing what's being returned. So we're not necessarily being able to do anything more detailed besides the forensic analysis that you would do typically on an image. So based on both of our privacies and copyright protections, it's really that two-way avenue until you hit download, where we would save somewhere for an indemnification, or you provide some feedback of a thumbs up, thumbs down. We would want to capture that prompt, know that we're doing that, because we're not continuing to learn based on user interactivity. We're doing that in our own labs and systems. And so when we release model 3.0, it's based on some of the feedback, but nothing based on what users are searching for. So hopefully that gives people more assurance to be able to use that in recognition that we are understanding both privacies, as you combine a whole bunch of prompts into one. It's not identified down to the end user.
Gotcha. One of the things that my students would certainly love for me to ask you is, how is this going to help us, the AI anyway, in our work with captions and metadata? Because I know if it's one thing that they hate doing, it's writing captions and metadata. So can you tell me a little bit about that? And then also, how can we detect AI use in captions and metadata?
Major Lewis, start on that one.
Yeah. So I guess I'll kind of work backwards. I think one of the things that I try to do, at least when we're showcasing AI capabilities within Photoshop to our public sector entities, especially the DoD, especially the communicators, public affairs practitioners, things like that, is my take on, based off of, the Adobe technology, but my take, using my background on the Air Force side, of what we should be doing in the metadata, in the photo captions, what we should probably say if we are to use this technology. And absolutely, Jeffrey talked about it earlier, we're trying to provide that transparency and sort of the ethical frameworks for the end users as well. And we want to make it as easy as possible. And we really want to push that, that you, if you're going to use this, you should be upfront to the public and to your end users and stakeholders that you've used generative AI. Here's the tools to make that easy for you. So with that said, you know, certainly I think about where if you're in a situation where you're editing a photo and you're removing something from the photo using generative AI or generative fill because you need to sanitize this for public consumption and remove something that's OPSEC related, that, you know, as I've learned in DIMPOS, is a photo manipulation, right? And so we know to put that in the caption, photo manipulation by Tech Sergeant Will Snuffy. So take that a step further, and if you are authorized at one point hypothetically to use Firefly to do something like that in the future, then I would imagine you would then say in the caption, you know, photo manipulation utilizing generative AI by Tech Sergeant Snuffy. So you got that part as a process. Number two, making sure the content credentials are turned on in Photoshop. So at the time of export, it's capturing all of that too, that you use generative AI. I liked what Jeffrey mentioned about the forensic analysis part being from the FBI prior to this job. You know, I like that too. So being able to giving that ability to the media, to the public, in case they want to see. Of course, they're not going to be able to see all the particular steps you took, the OPSEC-related thing that was in there before. However, they will be able to at least see the line item that you use generative AI and you're being transparent and upfront about it. So I think those two things are absolutely essential in the process if we are to do this and roll this out, which I hope we do. Now, as far as the writing the captions part and doing all of that, you know, I certainly think that like that would be some kind of great technology that, you know, Adobe could provide, right, at some point. It's not quite there yet. We don't have an ability for you to just type in like ChatGPT to say, I need a caption of an F-35 flying through the sky, XYZ, right? And then it would just spit that out for you because that's a tedious thing that you would do, right? That would be great, right? We don't have that now. So that's where that actually does come into play where, you know, for the time being, you've got sort of those sources certainly to utilize on the side if you do need to come up with a process to use that. I don't know.
Yeah, two things just to add to that. One is the ability to see how it's changed over time. That part's an opt-in, and that's also part of our ethical framework that there might be in times where you want to have everything that you are doing, any edits and manipulations, those need to be part of this. I think that's part of a lot of the DIMPOS creation side. But there are other times, as you said, OPSEC you don't want. So it's ability to turn this on and off inside of Photoshop. I think that will be really helpful. And it's going to be able to track that. So I know some of the captioning is, what did you do with it? That's actually being captured. Those are write commands that are being stored in the metadata, what you're doing if you've opted into that one, which I think is a very critical part to this, that we want to make sure that these were opt-in only. And then in terms of captioning, the cool thing about this is accessibility is a very big part to what we do. And you know, sometimes you look at an image and you say, okay, this is what's taking place in the image. And there's a lot of verbose, you know, long descriptions that you would want. One of the cool things about Firefly is that you're starting out with text and it's creating the image. And now that is currently your file name, which also can be part of your alt text automatically to that particular image for your web content. And so now you have kind of a built-in captioning, and whatever you want to do with that metadata in a rollover or put it on the image using your JavaScript or web content, you're able to do so. So there are some help to this, and hopefully for your students, this will automate a lot of things and just provide transparency throughout the process. But it'll be good to see where there's things that they still need to do manually, but there might be a lot that is happening automated now.
Oh, that's going to make them very happy. what won't your AI generate? What won't it do?
So it won't do, as we said, we've learned on Adobe stock content. So it doesn't have celebrities in there or a lot of you know, general public figures. We put some filters at place just because Firefly is general available, and so we don't want, you know, kids going in and searching for certain things. So there are blockers that we have on the prompt, and it'll let you know this word is being blocked because we don't have that. We're going to be also adding some ability because everyone wants, hey, here's a great, you know, bed of a model for Adobe Firefly, but we have some particularities. We have our own branding. We have our own images that we like it to be able to use. So we're going to have custom model extensions releasing very soon. You can go to firefly.adobe.com today and add a reference for a piece of content that you own. Paul did a great demonstration of the field manual and the character drawings that are on there, and you can use that now as a model for those. And so we're going to be adding more and more custom model extensions for an enterprise to be able to use. So there's a few things that we will just block, and there's ways that you can have DoD say, hey, we want to allow for certain militaries or what Adobe has blocked off as a violent because of some of the flags that we've raised. We can open up some of those things on an enterprise basis.
Well, that's awesome. That should be helpful with preventing concerns, I guess. Mm. That's the best way to put it, I guess.
Prior. One of the things they try to eliminate, too, is some of the biases when you do some of the typing. They want to make sure that you're going to get a wide variety of, ethnicities and backgrounds of different people. Sure. And things like that as well. So
that's the best. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. One of our biggest fears that we talk about a lot in DINFOS to avoid is losing credibility with your audience, right? Yep. You never want to do that. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about generative AI and we talk about its use in content creation, there's the chance, because of what other people are doing with their content creation and creating deepfakes and creating pieces of mis and disinformation, to lose that credibility. So sort of what are some other ways that we can avoid doing that with our audience?
One of the great things, we talked about content credentials, and it's just going to keep going back to that. I think it's one of the great decisions that Adobe has made, and the reason why we're kind of pioneering a lot of the efforts with the C2PA open source technology is that helps answer a lot of these types of questions of how do we ensure transparency? How are we building trust? How are we showcasing that this was Gen AI? So don't be fooled that this was Gen AI, and being very clear and transparent about that. That's what's established right from the get-go with the content authenticity and being able to sign that. So it's not necessarily, hey, blanket answer, everything's good for content authenticity, but that solves a lot of these issues because we're saying we're doing this at the forefront of the origination where it did originate, and we're saying this was Gen AI. And so that way, anything that's taking place from there, it's going to go back to that origins, know this was Gen AI. So that way it's used for its appropriate usage and not trying to say that this is what we captured. This is real. This was Gen AI, and this is really supposed to convey a story, a message visually, not necessarily that we've captured reality. So I think that's a critical piece to a lot of the questions of authenticity, transparency, deepfakes, copyright, and overall just content forgery that we're up against.
Yeah. I had the same thing too.
One of the things that I talked about at this workshop is sort of the new nutrition label, and it that if you were to look at that from on the Content Authenticity Initiative website, it's like a little bubble, like a circular point that's like CR on it. That's content credentials, right? That's what it stands for. And so what I envisioned to help sort of enable that the trust factor. And to maintain that is that I can see it where I'm on a .mil website. I'm in the photo gallery of the .mil website. I'm scrolling through, and I see certain images have that little label, right? And when I talk about the nutrition label, we talk about the nutrition label. We're trying with everyone else that's part of this initiative to have that become a commonplace thing in our society that, we look at nutrition labels at the grocery store. Now we're looking for nutrition labels, the credential stamp on images, especially for the ones where people are willingly and as they should be being upfront, this is generative AI that's used in this. So if I'm scrolling through a .mil website hypothetically, and then I see that some of these images have that circle, it's because that end user, that content manager that's been uploading that content to a CMS has maybe checked the box that says, yep, when I upload this image, check the box here, I use Gen AI in that image. So I want to make sure that stamp shows up, right? So, that we already have like code bases that we can provide for content managers to put that on websites where maybe in your CMS, like Drupal or something like that, you can actually check that box and then it'll pop for you right there. That, I think, is another important part of this too, is outwardly showcasing that, providing that stamp. Social media platforms, it would be absolutely wonderful to have Instagram, Facebook, for example, when you go to upload a photo in their system, that there's a checkbox for that too. Just as easy as you providing alt text, like Jeffrey mentioned, for accessibility concerns, maybe there's a checkbox for that CR stamp as well if you already use generative AI and put that on Photoshop, or I'm sorry, on Facebook or Instagram, where you can check that box and it shows up there too. So as we start seeing it so more commonplace, people will know to look for it and know that something they're seeing is generative AI. I can trust that because these people are being transparent about it and they're instilling my trust.
Mm-hmm. And since we're in the public sector office, we do promote and or preach and talk about the maintaining trust a lot. That's a major message that we come with. And so I think those custom model extensions will help them to create more content on brand, you know, like Jeffrey had mentioned, and also along with inside of Adobe Express, the way we showed that there are, we didn't really get to that part, but there is a branding aspect to that too. So when you can create templates for your folks to use, and they can apply the branding content from there, as well as like
and the branding would include colors, fonts. Yeah, here are the seals that are allowed.
Right,
here are
the
only
logos.
There are many bio pictures of some of the executives out there,
yeah.
And so having the defined one as part of your brand, that's going to help build it, because there's a visual to building and maintaining trust in addition to this great little icon of the CR, or like what we have in the PDFs, that nice little blue banner.
That's right.
It's so funny how it sometimes takes a visual like that to make all the difference, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, that was the first thing I noticed when you guys when you were talking about that, and then you showed the little thumbnail or watermark or whatever we're going to call it, and it became instantly recognizable. And I'm like, oh, that's something easy to look for every single time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what you want.
Yep.
You guys know, obviously, that we use your products to train our students on. How is this AI going to affect DINFOS instruction? I know our instructors are going to listen to this episode and hope that they're not going to be out of a job soon. So how do you guys see this AI affecting our instruction here?
You know, we get that quite a bit as we're, showcasing this technology across the public sector. So it's wonderful that I get to travel around with Jeffrey and Paul. But we get that quite a bit from folks in the audience that are maybe that graphic designer, or maybe that podcast editor, video editor, who's been at this job for a long time and very passionate about what they do, and they've worked through many iterations, maybe Photoshop Creative Suite, or you know, all these iterations that weren't cloud connected, and they could tell you the stories about everything they went through. I certainly could, you know, being prior enlisted and doing a lot of this myself as well. Where I certainly wouldn't want AI taking over my job. Mm-hmm. What we basically, and it's easy for us to quickly say this in return, no, absolutely. We ask the question, how often throughout the day do you, as a graphic designer, get tasked with very tedious, mundane things that take up a lot of your time? Basic edits to a photo, making a social media graphic template, and making 100 of them. When you originally were brought onto the job, you were going to create really cool graphic animations in After Effects, or make a really cool intricate video. But unfortunately, you don't have time to do that because your day is taken up with very basic, mundane things. Hmm. That's where AI, the co-pilot, that left seat, right seat, comes into play, because it's going to free you up the time to get you back to doing a lot of the things that you wish you could have done throughout your day, but unfortunately could not, because your leadership, the good idea fairies out there, have requested you to do something that you're like, dang it, now I got to spend Thursday doing this instead of the cool podcast that I wanted to work on. Heck, I run into this at Adobe, where I worked on a video yesterday, but I really wanted to play with AR related stuff, but I don't know when I'm going to get to that. Sorry, boss. But so that's what we talk about, and that's what we kind of talk about when we get comments like that, because we totally get it. We've all been in those shoes before too, and none of us want that to happen to anybody, and that's not the purpose of this. Mm-hmm. We don't want people's jobs to get replaced. We want to actually free you up. So now it becomes a matter of helping to improve retention, right? The military is all about making sure that we're retaining our best talent and not actually losing them to different places, right? So let's make sure that they're happy. They're happy by actually being able to do the jobs that they're really excited to do and learn, versus the mundane things that may actually frustrate people and you lose them. We also want to provide really cool, innovative technology. And a lot of times you may not find that in the public sector, right? And you go somewhere else to get access to that. We want to actually be able to provide AI technology too. So that way, when you come to your job, you're proud. You've got all the things your leadership provided, giving you access to all this great technology. to then play around and do really cool things. So I don't know if you want to add to that, but that's that to me, when I think about that, I think about freeing up your time to really get down to what you really were brought on to do.
I love that answer. And that's what people want to hear, that we're not out of a job. But no, that's great because there, of course, there's tons of projects that you would rather do that than color correct 100 photos. And so, you know, this technology is great for that. And that is awesome. I have kind of a big AI question since you guys are working so closely with it. You know, we're just talking about content generation tools and how Adobe is working with AI products. And it's still an AI product. And you guys are familiar with ChatGPT and other AI products. You know, we worry about AI putting us out of a job, but then there's also that the Skynet concern, right? the Terminator concern that always comes along with people when you talk about AI, when we talk anything related to AI, right? Are those concerns realistic? Do we have to worry about them? Do you see a future where AI, where you stop telling it what to do and it starts telling you what to do?
I will say from the our side, which is one reason that we really love the tools and technology that Adobe has said this is what we want to engage in. That whole, you know, robots becoming sentient and taking over is, you know, they're possibly, you know, you can see things play out. And our team all just read the Coming Wave and wanted to kind of understand kind of like the larger aspects to this. And then we felt very gratified that where our tool set is saying is like, hey, helping people create really cool imagery just based on text and helping them, you know, be able to tell their stories visually much better than, or even more relevant to the time and being able to release it. And like, as far as any concerns, if people want to dabble in the Gen AI world, Adobe be the best place to start with, because not only is it nice and visual, you get the immediate gratification and the response. We've set up that ethical framework and the privacy in order to do so, and the content credentials. It's a great place to start and say, hey, we are doing Gen AI, but not just doing it because it's the buzzword, but it's helping us get our products out faster. It is helping us scale what we are doing to the entire ecosystem. So now the person that is the good idea fairy, they can create their own image right now. They have the template. They have the sandbox to work in, but a very much that here's the six tools that you can use and you can only use this color. So they're good ideas, get some constraint to still maintain brand trust and all those things within the tool sets that we provide. So our hope, and that's kind of the easy part of our Gen AI conversation, is we're not part of the robots that will be taking over the world. We're the folks that will help tell the story to do the warnings ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, I think the other thing too to think about and is that like, hey, I wouldn't mind certain functions that would do things for me, especially at the house, like maybe cook an omelet, but like, or do my dishes.
Yeah, just not kill Sarah Connor.
Yeah. Please leave Sarah alone and alive. We need her for the future. No, I mean, all jokes aside, like exactly what Jeffrey said. And now, at least for the time being, and what I read about in the Coming Wave is that like for now, like there still needs to be human input. Like it's AI is still very much assistive technology, right? Like it isn't at a point, at least right now, where like the output is so severe that it's just going to completely take us over and wipe us out or do really kind of critical things. There still needs to be human input, either at the front end with applying the text or at the back end with verifying and validating whatever the output is something you want to use, right? So there's still that, right? So I don't personally feel as concerned right now because it still takes a human to do a lot of these functions. It's not completely a sort of solo thing. Like a human has to make an executive decision basically in order for that to happen.
Good. You guys made me feel a lot better. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, it's not the ability to pull the plug.
Yeah.
Isolate enough. And I think that's one thing that also when you think about us training our models is that it's done in a separate spot. So like I said, we're not learning off of your inputs and your, it's not a continuous learning right now with the end users. It's in a separate, and then we're training it, and then we're then making that available to you. So our separation is already there, and most have followed that model, which is really good. So that way, at any point in time, it's isolated, you can pull the plug. But like I said, the Adobe one's pretty nice and easy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, what's the future look like? You guys showed me so many cool products and so many cool things that you could do inside of your Adobe products already today. So what's kind of the pie in the sky future for Adobe and generative AI?
One of the ones we didn't get to show you was about Premiere. They're working on some things in Premiere, and the video, which I guess I could describe to you a little bit, shows where Firefly is assessing the video that you've uploaded into your bin there and recommending sound effects and the ways that you might cut up your B-roll to be inside of there, and also producing some storyboards. I think that'll be really cool. And what's it doing with Acrobat? Yeah. Well, they're talking about putting it in Acrobat as well, where it might summarize your, maybe you have like a 300-page PDF. It could make a summary for you, that kind of thing.
Wow.
So again, same thing alongside putting it into the tools and assisting you through some of the questions you may ask of a document or some of the quick cuts that is part of, you know, video is very rarely mundane, but some things can be mundane, and having some of those assisted technologies to be able to understand what you're trying to create through a few questions and prompts and then help generate a start. And I think ideation is one of the great places for AI to begin and to help the non-visual people to visualize, help to, you know, generate these storyboards with minimal investment to say, no, we're not going this path. All right, well, let's make a couple changes here, and then you're able to rapidly create that. So I think it's helped a lot of people in training and enablement, and as well as early messaging and overall campaigns to say, here's some ideas. These are not the final, but these help people visualize it, because the whole 1950s picture this and drawing those boards on there, now you're able to do it in a matter of seconds through a multiple, and you're able to reuse the same character types and same models, which will really help.
On the Firefly website too, you'll see there are some things that say in exploration. If you go through there, you can see some of the things that they're working on. One of the ones I think will make a big difference is the text to 3D object, because 3D is pretty difficult, and we have the application. Is it called Modeler? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Modeler that they just introduced a while back. I think it was 2 years ago, a year ago. And it's still kind of difficult, and it's, you know, Windows-based only currently, and it's also a VR. But if you can text to 3D image, you know, that's a pretty big deal.
Oh, for sure. That's crazy.
And then bringing that into your After Effects compositions where you can still manipulate it, you know, don't have to have the 3D Studio Max intern to start those up for you.
Man, if you guys can shrink our timelines at all, I mean, that's that's pretty awesome.
Yes.
And that goes back to your question about the people, is our job going to be taken away? You just said it right there yourself. Like, you hope to shrink your timeline, right, in order to speed things up, to put content out. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the point, right? Yeah. Like, or one of the main points is functionality to help speed up what a lot of times is very tedious work that you may not enjoy as much, but it's necessary for your output.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I'll say is that a lot of the conversations we've had is, you know, they want their content to be relevant, and they're competing against a lot of times the ability to control the narrative of the story that they want to tell because they're waiting in a queue for the content creators to help them articulate that. So this has now empowered a lot of agencies that, you know, they're competing against the public that is trying to, you know, convey a message. Now they get to say, hey, in coming from us, here's what is, and, you know, they could be more relevant because the timeline has shrunk and they're not waiting in a queue behind, you know, what the training department needed for the graphic designer to produce for them.
Yeah, surprisingly, a lot of the people that come to us are the design teams asking, what can we do to help our non-designers create that stuff, like take some of that load off of us? Mm-hmm. And these are exactly some of those tools.
Gentlemen, I'm a convert. I'm all for it.
Giddy up.
Where can we send any members of our audience who are interested in finding out more about Adobe products, generative AI, how it's working, anything about you guys?
Yeah, I'll throw four out there right now. Two non-Adobe is contentauthenticity.org. That's the C2PA. You'll get to learn about the memberships, find the open source tools that they can use and leverage, and get a nice video demonstration of that. Content credentials is where you can do both an inspection and an understanding of what that that certification is like on those particular images. And then, like Paul mentioned, we go to firefly.adobe.com just to see the new things. There is so much moving so fast that we need to continually be updated, and they start to release more things that are available or just that they're exploration. And then I would go to the adobe.com Trust Center. That's where you're going to see everything from our ethical framework, from the common controls frameworks that we're doing, privacy. I think those things are very important to analyze for any organization that's looking to bring on any tools to really hopefully help accelerate their content creation, but know what they're also doing as far as their trust. And I think it's a great model for other agencies as well as folks that are looking to say, do we adopt this or not? I think that's those four, I would say, would be really helpful.
Well, guys, thank you so much. I'm going to finish up today with our famous final DINFOS question that we teach all of our students that I'm sure Steve is familiar with. Is there anything that you guys would like to add? Maybe anything that I forgot to ask you? And the look on his face goes, I remember that.
I certainly do. And I remember because that's where you get to say the thing that you wish you could have said, but you're just now remembering it. So, yes, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. That brings, like, so many memories. And I still do it to this day when I'm conducting interviews.
And it works.
No, it's really, we're really happy and excited and grateful to actually be sitting in the studio at DINFOS proper in the schoolhouse talking about these things. To me, it's exciting because we're having these conversations because we're aware that, like, the public sector agencies and a lot of their content creators out there in those agencies want to utilize these capabilities, but there needs to be a lot of research. There needs to be a lot of ethical questions answered, procedures. But we're excited about the fact that this is coming. Like, people are taking these steps. I mean, the White House releasing an executive order about it, about the, you know, proliferation of it and getting it out there to everyone in the hands of our creators. And so it's exciting to know that that's coming. And it's also really cool that we're a part of it and being partners in it and helping to provide guidance out there to the DOD, to all these other agencies to help make informed decisions. I think that's, we're just grateful for this, for you all to have us come in here and talk about it more.
Oh, I want to thank you guys so much for joining us today. It was really, really important, I think, to have you here at the schoolhouse to talk to us about your tools and then to come on the podcast and talk about it for our larger audience. You know, this is sort of where the future of content creation is going, and to know that we can harness it in an easy way and in a way that we can verify that content creation is incredibly important. So again, thank you guys so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it, and I hope we can have you on again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll be right back.